is Friday once again, coming up on mid-March here soon. Amazing how time flies. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for being here. I'm Henrik Palmgren, a geet from Götaland, what we today call Sweden, and it's great to have you with us. We are speaking with Stefan Jakobsson from the today dissolved Party of the Swedes. We are going to speak more about the lessons learned from the successes and the less successful aspects of their political attempts. He was elected Secretary General for the Alliance for Peace and Freedom, APF, a far-right European political party in November 2015. He is also one of the main figures behind Logik Förlag, or Logik Publishing. Great interview ahead. Please stay tuned. Welcome, Stefan. It's very good to finally have you on the program. You've done so much great work for our people and taken a stand in a way that I think few others have actually had the courage to do. So it's great to finally have you on the show.
Thank you, Henrik. It's very nice to be here. I listen to your program very often, and I have been wondering when you're going to invite me. So it's very nice to be here.
Yeah, so well, we spoke with Frank De Silva when he was on. It was on 314. It was over a year ago, like a year and a half ago. And he said, "Well, I'll get you in touch with Stefan." You know, so it's like, okay, great. Well, I'll wait for that. But I should have reached out earlier. But you know, oh well, it's great to have you here. So thank you so much for being here. And obviously today, you know, I wanted to talk about, you know, Swedish politics and the Party of the Swedes, the history of that. There's a lot of things there to talk about. We also, of course, want to discuss what you're up to right now and all that stuff. But I think, you know, as a way of trying to understand both the environment in Sweden and what works, what doesn't work, etc., I think Party of the Swedes is a very good place to begin. Why don't you just tell us the history of the party, how it, you know, if you can do that in a somewhat short time frame of how it began and what happened with the party at the end.
Yeah, of course. The Party of the Swedes was founded in November in 2008, and it was founded by people who have been active in the nationalistic movement in Sweden for many years since they were youngsters. Me myself started not to get involved right from the beginning, but when the party was founded, I saw instantly that this was something that I wanted to contribute to. So I contacted the chairman of the party, who was Daniel Höglund at the time, and we started a cooperation, and I tried to help. I think it was a year later that I got involved, and I got a membership in the party, and the party grown on me. You know, I started to do more and more. I really liked the party as a whole, because you have to remember that the Party of the Swedes was not just like any other party in Sweden. It was more of a movement where we also had a political party. So we did activities and organized very various different events. We had a publishing house, we had the newspapers, magazines, websites, etc. Not just have a party structure and ran in the elections. So this was something that suited me very good. And eventually, some years later, I become chairman of the Party of the Swedes. And we did a huge campaign before the elections now in 2014. But the result was, to be honest, a disaster. We had put in a lot of effort, a lot of money, you know, sacrificed a lot. And we really felt after the election that it was not possible to us to reach any further with this party. We did an inventory of, you know, the people we had after the election, how many were interested in really working, how was our possibilities to succeed, and we felt that even if we had done many great things during this year, it was not possible to go any further. And it's my opinion that a party or an organization or whatever the tool is, we have to remember that it's just a tool to reach our goals. And if the tool doesn't work anymore, then we have to try to find other ways, other solutions to work. And this was a reality that we had to face. It was not possible to us for us to succeed any longer with the party of the Swedes. And therefore, it would be stupid and it would be unjust to all the people that were involved in the party if we kept trying, but know that we couldn't come any further. So in last year in May, we had to take the decision of closing down the party.
Yeah, that's right. And what do you think contributed to the to those, why the election was a disaster, basically? What was it that didn't work?
I think there are, of course, several reasons. One of the big reason, I think, is it is impossible to compete with the Sweden Democrats regarding to election results. Because even if there are major differences between our party, for the regular Swedish people, they will see two parties that are opposed to immigration. They will see one small party. They will see one big party that already are established in the parliaments and so on. And they will see a new party. And they will go to the election for the party that are the bigger one, even if they don't have a politics that will actually lead to a difference. They will choose it until that party have proven itself not worthy.
Right.
And as and as long as the Sweden Democrats are in opposition and don't have any real influence, direct influence, I would say in the politics, people will still hope that they can change things. But of course, this is not everything. If it was only a disaster in the election, you know, this we could have worked through. But there were, of course, other reasons. You know, we saw that the spirit of a lot of people who have worked very devoted before the election didn't have the strength to carry on anymore. You know, people get tired. I think many people have got their hopes too high.
Yeah,
and when they saw the result, it was very hard for them to bear. You know, so it was several reasons, and you know, it has always been quite a small core who have done the majority of the work within the party, and we had a lot of problems to expand this core. And this, I think, is you know, very crucial, very important if a party should keep going. You know, we need new fresh blood who can continue and help us grow. But if we just get supporting members and people who vote for us, or you know, okay, they hand out some leaflets and they're trying, but they are not fulfilling everything that they can, then it's very difficult to continue on this path.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, this leads to, of course, several questions here, both in terms of where we are politically in Sweden, and also, of course, the mentality of the Swedish people, and whether or not they're actually ready for something that is this distinct. But let me begin with this. I mean, what I feel is that the window is also opening more now, especially considering that the Sweden Democrats seem to be going very, very much, much softer now on immigration. At the same time, you do have the problematic of other parties somewhat picking up on some of the rhetoric, right? But to me, it feels like something like the Party of the Swedes would definitely, you know, have that more distinction of a more you know, firm stance on immigration and all that, that would be actually something that would be successful. But it didn't. It wasn't for some reason. Why is that, do you think?
I think it's a part actually of the mentality of the Swedish people. They are not ready to face the truth yet. They are not ready to take responsibility of what must be done. You know, we were the only party who talked about that immigrants who have come to Sweden must leave Sweden.
Right.
Not just that we have to say stop, no more can come. the ones that already are here are making Sweden a disaster. And this is a problem we have to solve. And I think a lot of people are not ready to face this reality. You know, they have some friend or, you know, colleagues at work who are a non-Swede. And, you know, they have, I think it's problematic for a lot of people to go over this step and see what must be done in order to save our nation and our people. And,
yeah.
And I think this is one of the reason. And also, I think that, you know, we have been quite slow to change in Swedes in general. You know, it's taking a long time to build up this trust that you need in order to get people to vote for you. And also, I must say that what we can see now is that, okay, even if we had got some better results in the votes, it will still be nothing if you compare to the immigrant invasion that is happening. You know, if we are going to change this country just by taking a vote, then our people will be dead, you know,
yeah.
long gone.
Yeah,
you know,
it's true.
So I think, you know, it's important that we work in other ways to actually make people believe that it's possible to make change in other ways, you know, that we can change our society from under, you know, not from the parliament and down. We have to change the mentality of the people. It doesn't matter which party rules. The only thing that is important is that the mentality of the people demands the change from the people who rules. You know, if we change the what is political correct to our ideas, then we have won. We don't need new parties because the old parties have to adapt to the new reality.
Absolutely, that's correct, and obviously that is the meta-political battle, if you will. A political party is ultimately, I think, an end result of something. It's an expression of a need that's you know, wanted, if you will, by the people. We'll get to that in a minute, but let me just say this first. Despite the fact that Sweden is an embarrassment internationally, despite the fact that our society is literally falling apart, things are in shambles. This is not enough then for people to go in this direction, right? It tells us that, unfortunately, it seems like things have to get much, much, much worse before people are ready and willing to move in the direction that you're talking about, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And still, people have the possibility to see what they want. You know, still, it's possible to live in more or less all white areas, all Swede areas. You know, you don't have to visit the city centers at night. You know, you can still have a comfortable life here. So, of course, it has to be worse before everyone really are affected all time, because still there are places to hide. It's, you know, you can put on the glasses and pretend that this is not happening. And I think also it's very overwhelming for people, because it's at the same time so very much things that is happening that people, they can't realize that it's true.
Yeah.
I think they can't grasp it, what is actually happening.
No, that's true. And I mean, that's the responsibility of the media, of course, here in this regard, that they have been so instrumental in pushing the opposition to the side, in trying to just full on lies and omissions, lies by omissions, really, or a conspiracy by omission of not telling the Swedish people of what really is going on. They're trying to say, you know, things are great, or you know, if there are criticism, they're very minor and they're only in very few areas, etc. But what would you say to that in terms of the media environment and the climate in Sweden? And obviously, you guys, as being, you know, formerly the party of the Swedes, know this better than anybody, considering what they wrote about you guys.
Yeah, most definitely. I think the so-called Swedish media is one of the most extreme medias in the world, and I think, you know, we have a the political correctness is, you know, it's hard to express how much this words actually means in Sweden. You know, it's more or less impossible to talk about so many subjects, and they have so very clear agenda on what is okay to write and what is not okay, and you know, they move ahead on all people, all organizations, all party that tries to do more or less anything. You know, now we have in one of the main newspapers, I saw now that they are a witch hunt for people that works as a doctors and on the hospitals, because they have been writing so-called racist comments on internet forums, and for this they cannot be in you know, a doctor anymore, or they cannot work with other people.
Right.
I saw now also a bus driver that have written something on the internet, and now he was suspended. You know, and they say we cannot have racist working on the buses.
How did they find this out, by the way? Was this found out in the same way that the troll hunters and Robert Aschberg and all these people went after, like, commenters with the hacker group or whatever? Is that the same way, or is it this a different?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, I think it's also the same people, but they have sold now the information to another newspaper than they used before. But it's the same people who are behind it. So.
God Almighty. Yeah, so the conformity here, the lashes that are, you know, attributed to those who are not conforming to the mainline is ferocious. I mean, I've been, you know, struggling with this question for a long time. Like, what is that as a component and a part of the Swedish mentality? And surely that is something that has to just end and break for this to resolve itself. So otherwise, I think we're a screwed people, to be honest. If this doesn't just, you know, if we just don't give a crap anymore about what the hell happens here in terms of what other people think about us and what words are thrown at us, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is a big problem with the Swedish mentality that, you know, we want to be liked by everyone. You know, it's very important that, you know, your neighbors like you and your coworkers at job. You know, we don't usually take a conflict with people, Swedes in general, and this is a problem because we take one step back all the time because we don't want any problems. You know, we just want to deal with our lives self. We don't want problems, and this is becoming the problem because we are not able to take a stand. We're not able to say stop. What are you doing? I think this is a very big problem with the Swedish mentality and something that we have to learn to overcome. You know, the media's effect on us only have effect if we allow it. If it's like you say that we don't care anymore what they're writing, then the problem is solved because they will not write it because it will not have any effect.
That's right. Yeah, we need to be liberated from the ability of caring about what other people think about us. But mostly, again, it's this, I'd say the environment is very much a, how do I describe this? It's like a glob, really. It's not that individualized. It's like that the whole group is somehow judging you, and it's people are constantly trying to figure out what is acceptable, what is not. And this can, as we've seen also with certain issues, this can move and change, and it can actually move fairly quickly in some questions in terms of all of a sudden, you know, what was it? It was about a year ago or so. There actually was a kind of a shift, a change in the tone in the media, right? A certain news outlets, like even the Göteborgs-Posten, for example, started writing a little bit differently. There's some other outlets online and whatnot that actually are beginning to change that a little bit. And I think that to a certain extent, the conformity that we see can partially maybe be to an advantage if we manage to move and shift that aspect of what actually is acceptable, as you said before, right? That if we can change that political correctness into a different place, then, you know, all of a sudden, overnight, it could be perfectly acceptable to question certain things that never has been questionable before, if you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I agree. And it's very interesting to see now, even if it's small changes, but as you said, it's changes in the media, etc. But what I am thinking is, why is this change becoming? Is it because they actually believe in the change? Is it because the trust of the media is so very poor now in Sweden? People don't believe the media anymore.
No.
That they have to be able to move a little bit closer to the truth, you know, to be able to sell the newspaper or to have some kind of credibility. Or, you know, I think we should ask ourselves, why is this happening? Is it happening because there actually is a shift, or is it happening just because it's a way for them to survive at all?
Right, yeah.
But even so, I think, you know, it's something... something positive in all of this darkness that we started to see these changes. But I think, you know, we should keep our heads up because all the media have done for so many years have been anti-Swedish, anti-nationalistic, etc., etc.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have to be careful so we don't just fall in another trap or, you know, just losing our guards and something worse happens later on.
Right, well, exactly. We definitely can't get complacent. And by no means am I suggesting that. It's nowhere near any kind of reasonable, you know, dialogue going on in the media here. It just, I think you're right. I think they basically want to remain in power. They would still want to have some level of influence, have viewers, readership, etc. And I frankly didn't think they would change. I thought that they're going to deny and they're going to go down with the ship. But I think that they are now, you know, taking out the lifeboats, basically, and trying to jump in there. That's what we're seeing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think this is because we have a really strong alternative media in Sweden. I think, you know, Sweden is top of the line from a European and maybe from a world perspective. But I think we have become so very successful in the alternative media just because ordinary media has been so very extreme.
That's true. Yeah, I think it's true. Now, let's just for a moment talk about the policies of the Party of the Swedes, because it kind of dovetails a bit with what we're speaking about now with the media. And as I said before, in terms of how they treated the party, accusations of being just a national socialist party. Was that true? Tell us about some of the policies here.
The Party of the Swedes have never been a national socialistic party. But there have been many people who have been involved in national socialistic movements before. Who come to the Party of the Swedes, who, and also some of the people who founded it have been active in this type of organizations before, but the 10 points that we had were nationalistic, and they were written from a Swedish perspective in a modern society. We didn't try to copy anyone else. We tried to build a political ID that would work for a Swedish society and for the mentality of the Swedish people. So I would say that no, the Party of the Swedes had never been a national socialistic party or movement. But if we look at the party and the politics it stood for, I think it's basic core values that every nationalistic individual could stand behind. You know, a Swedish Sweden, a Sweden where we didn't have influence from abroad regarding to our media, In other words, that the Swedish people actually own the media that was concentrated in Sweden. That we will have a financial system that will be beneficial to the Swedish people and not to the globalist banksters. You know, this is, I think, very, very common nationalistic views that that I think nationalistic people in all over the world can agree on. And this is not just from an ideology that was based in Germany for 100 years ago. You know, this is...
For very few years too, by the way. It's like, it just, it rose, of course, very quickly in prominence and then it fell, but everything else consequently has to be tainted by that. It's we know it's a trick. We know it's a very sly ability to basically quiet anything on that side of the political side of things, and they do this to win. Of course, that's the main objective here. They want to win. They want to have their agenda enforced upon us. And frankly, they've made so much headway due to this, and they've been of course tremendously successful doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we also have to remember that a lot of young people, you know, naturally sees Germany in the 30s and 40s as, you know, at least a society that broke free from the international tyranny. And also that the media's influence on young people have been so very huge that young people actually thought that, okay, I'm a naturalist, and then I must be like the media says that naturalistic people are.
Right.
So I think this was a huge problem, especially in Sweden during the 80s and 90s and so, because there were a lack of older people giving advice and also older people contributing with our own nationalistic identity and ideology. This didn't exist in Sweden. You know, when I started to get involved when I was 16 years old, the people who were older than me were maybe 4 or 5 years older. Right. There were no people, almost no people in the 30s or 40s. They didn't exist. You know, people were active during a few years, then people left the movement and start just taking care of their families and you know, left this environment. But now, the last few years, we have seen a real change, because the same people who have been active now for 10, 15 years are still there, are still giving advice, are still working, are still... trying to do a change. And I think this is, of course, necessary. We need people with experience in order to solve our problems. And if we look at the movements in Europe, a lot of them who are much more successful than we have been in Sweden, several of generations who have worked with this throughout the years, and this is something that we have not had in Sweden before. So I think now still we have a really good possibility to actually do some work, because now we have the experience of, you know, what have we done wrong. We have been able to analyze the situation in a whole other way than when you are 15 or 20 years old and no experience of life. Now we have a possibility to use all of this experience.
Yeah, indeed. You know, I want to speak about that in a moment here, but you mentioned yourself, you were 16, you got into this. Was there anything in particular that awoken you to this? Was it just maybe where you were or how things were changing? What took you in this direction to begin with?
Yeah, I thought about this question a lot of times. I think it's very hard to pinpoint on, you know, an exact occasion or, you know, a time. When I was about 12, 13 years old, I started to, you know, look at the world in another way, not just as a child anymore, but you know, started to see what was happening around me. And at that time, I lived on a small island outside of Gothenburg, with only about 1,000 inhabitants. So you know, when you got into the city, you could really see the difference from a small ethnic pure society and what was going on already back then in Gothenburg. And I started to think about this more and more. And at the same time, I also started to listen to naturalistic music. And this got me even more interested. And also the feeling of being a part of something bigger, being a part of a people, you know, with a history, with a tradition, with a culture. You know, this is not something that you normally discuss with children about. At least my parents didn't discuss this kind of topics, but
right.
with the music and with what I could see what was happening in society, I started more and more to picking up all the puzzle and, you know, forming my my identity. After a couple of years, so when I was 16 years old, I entered the first naturalistic organization that I have been a part in. And since then, I have been working very, very hard for this, I think it's 16 years time now.
Yeah. Well, very good. We need more people like that, obviously. So thank you for doing everything you're doing, and also for, you know, having the courage of taking on the leadership role for the Party of the Swedes, and you know, doing what you're doing. And I think, and I, as all things, it shouldn't be seen as a failure, because it isn't. It's just what you said that it is. It's part of a understanding of what needs to be done for us to move in the right direction, to be able to take back our country, to be able to save the Swedish people, because that's ultimately what's being targeted here, and that's ultimately what's at stake here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I must say, from a personal point of view, that, you know, I have no regrets of what I have done during this year. And you know, for me, it's okay to fail. It's okay, because if you fail, it means you have tried. And you know, there is no perfect recipe of how we're going to save our people. We have to try. We have to see what works, what doesn't work. And we can only see this if we actually try to do it. And this is what me and a lot of other people have done during this year. We have tried. We have tried different approaches, different ways. We have failed several times, but we have always learned something from it. We have always keep moving forward. And even if it can be one step back, we have taken two steps forward. So I think, you know, it is important to fail, because that means that you are trying, and that means that you have now seen, okay, we cannot do it like this. We have to rethink our model and try again and do something better. I think this is the only way.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously that's how you strengthen yourself. That's how you improve yourself. That's how you become better than your opposition, right? Because I think at the same time, the people who have been part of the, or who are the establishment in Sweden, who are the in the leading roles of media and education and politics, obviously, and all these facets of life that are controlling the situation right now, I think they're getting soft to a certain degree. At the same time, they've been in a very cush situation where they are not the ones who are being threatened. I think to a certain degree they feel that they're winning and they're getting ahead, right? While we are gathering more and more troops daily, if you will. Obviously more people are coming to our side because they can actually see what is actually happening in their neighborhood, in their city, in their county, and ultimately in their country, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And we have people that, because of the media pressure, because of the pressure from the establishment, we have people who have gained strength because of it. You know, they have been tested, and they still continue to move on. But I am sure that the people that rules now, they have never been pressured. They have never been pushed. They have never been tested.
No.
So when the time comes, they will not be able to handle it because they have been in their position maybe 20 years, 30, 40 years without ever being tested.
Yeah, true. So obviously, great kind of, what do you call it, great faith, if you will, in younger generations that have grown up under different conditions and whatnot. But what would you say, if we just look back a bit in terms of how we ended up in the situation we are, is it the generations prior to us that have kind of allowed these things to go on unchecked? Are these failures as you see them, or did they just try to adapt to their times that they lived in, and then they try to make it comfortable and easy for themselves, but ultimately that it's now led us to the point where we are today? Who do we blame, if we're to blame anybody here?
Yeah, I think, you know, it would be very easy to just blame it on, you know, our parents and the older generations. But at the same time, I think if they knew exactly what would happen, they would of course have done something. You know, I can't think that people would have known that we would be in this situation and not have done anything about it. So I think it's a little bit too easy to just to say it was, you know, the older generation. But of course, in some extent, the blame is on them. It's what's on their watch. You know, they were the ones who were going to keep our country good during, you know, their living period. You know, they have borrowed their country from their children, and they have a responsibility before their ancestors. So of course they have failed, but still I think it's too easy just to blame them. But we can see and we have it clear that the mass media in Sweden were very much responsible to the change that was going on, to pressuring the politics into changing.
Yeah.
So this is very clear how it all started and when Sweden actually officially become a multicultural state already in 1975. But this is very clear. But you know, I don't see that we can just, you know, blame a generation. I think, you know, we are in the situation we are. And now our focus must be to see how we can move past it and win and actually survive as a people and as a country. And this is all the things that matters. You know, we can be angry at the older generation after we have succeeded, but now we cannot try to divide our forces by saying, you know, you have destroyed our people, so you are not welcome. We need everyone. We need all Swedish people, old, young men and women. Everyone must come to our banner and fight for survival.
Yes, absolutely. So also then, obviously, it is the sly tactics of our detractors that have been manipulating us that need to be held responsible, because these people have shaped the as I used to say, the moral foundations of what has allowed all of this to happen, right? That we've been convinced that morally this is the just thing to do. This is the morally correct thing to do, to give up our territories, to hand over our resources, to actually actively deny our own people the benefits of those things that our ancestors actually built, and to give it to someone else, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And sometimes I think it's so very overwhelming. You know, I can understand somehow that people don't, you know, they have problems to see what is actually going on, because even for people who knows what's going on and follow it very closely, it can sometimes be so very overwhelming. And I think Swedes are in general very trustful people. You know, if someone says something, we trust it. You know, we don't have any reason to doubt them or think that they are lying to us. And this is, of course, having been taken advantage of, that everything that we held dear, everything that we think is normal, they use it against us.
Yes.
You know, and this was why we previously has been a very successful nation, even though we are a very small nation, small people in comparison to Europe or the world. But still, if we look at our history, you can see that the Swedes really are an amazing people. And now everything is, I won't say gone, but many of it is destroyed, and it will take a long time to recover it all. Even if we would change society tomorrow, it will take a long time to recover everything that we have been lost.
You know, I tend to see some of these things, or I try to see them sometimes from a bigger perspective, just for the fact of what you said, that simply taking them at face value would be too overwhelming. It's too, the emotions, the anger that comes with that can be too much, basically. And I try to see it as almost a larger lesson of improvement, right? Because we have to recognize that the Swedish people have been isolated from war and conflict for, somewhat longer time than most other countries or people to a certain extent. It's made us, soft to a certain extent, despite that there's a level of success that came with that in terms of how we were able to build our economy and all that stuff. But frankly, our lack of challenges within that is what's made us unable to see the fact that other people can take advantage of us and do take advantage of us or try to manipulate us or whatever you have there. And I see that, you know, part of this process that's happening right now is a strengthening, which I like, which I appreciate, meaning that I try to see a positive side to all the sadness and the madness that's happening right now, that this is a perfect opportunity to us to reinvent ourselves, to reinvigorate, to insert energy, thrust and dedication into this and become part of a battlefield, really, that we haven't been part of in a few hundred years now. I don't know how you see it.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I always try to look at things from a positive point of view. You know, a lot of people are saying, you know, it's done, it's finished, we cannot do anything about the situation, and people get demoralized. But I think, you know, the most important thing is to always have hope, to always have faith, and always to work towards that goal. And, you know, we have to, like you said, see this as a challenge, an opportunity to find ourselves again, and also to make sure that this never happens again. You know, that we never lose our guard again, that we make sure that our society is built in a way that can, which lasts, which can hold for hundreds and hundreds of years, and still producing, you know, strong Swedish men and women that, you know, still have all the good qualities that we have had during all these of hundreds and thousands of years, but still be in control of our own faith and our own society.
Absolutely. And, you know, as you say, if we don't even think that we can win, no one else is ever going to believe us. If the leadership that is supposed to take us out of the situation is doubting itself, is too weak to have this belief in themselves, it's just never going to work. It's kind of what you said earlier about repatriation and things like this. It's, in my view, it's just not a matter of if it's going to happen. It's about how it's going to happen. That's what it is. There has to be a determination and a will that comes into the situation that sets the tone and says, this is what's going to happen, you know, and we have to make sure that it moves in this direction. No one else will.
Yeah, absolutely. And we should never apologize for our actions or for our beliefs.
No.
You know, this is also, of course, a part of this social stigma and political correctness that is in Sweden. But we can only, as we have expressed before, we can only break it if we don't listen to it. And this, of course, must be with our ideas. We have to present them as the most natural thing in the world. It's nothing strange with our ideas. It's nothing radical with our ideas. This is the natural way. The radical, the unnatural thing is what is happening now. And this, we must be able to make people see this.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's not us who need to be held responsible for something that we haven't even done. We are not the people who are destroying the country. We are not the ones who... This is the other thing, that the way that the tone has been moved in the media all the time is basically that whoever holds, in their view, a morally reprehensible position on whatever question it's regarding, that they somehow have to answer for these immoral views or whatever. But the fact is, it's about flipping that and turning that on those people, especially the media, of course, who should be held responsible for the fact that they have destroyed, you know, thousands of people's of lives, and they have done it in such a way that they weren't even able to democratically be part of the decision making. They never asked for this. And look at, I mean, just look at the state of Sweden right now, and even the fact that I've said this in other shows, but you know, we've been in a position where we've been so economically successful that we a country of 8 million Swedes have been able to help a continent. We've been sending billions of dollars to Africa in aid and these kinds of things. A tremendous amount of economy that has been shared to other parts of the world. Let's assume we're talking with someone who's for multiculturalism and for helping other people and all that stuff. They don't even realize that this capacity to help others, which I ultimately, you know, at the end of it, don't agree with. I think we should help ourselves first before we help others. But anyway, that very engine, that very ability to help others is now being destroyed. I mean, we're economically, we're in the, you know, we're in the gutter right now. And we're going to, you know, for us to even help other people, we need to get ourselves out of that situation, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree. And I think... this with helping other people, it's a reality that I think, you know, every country must face, that the world is starting to get overcrowded. If we help them, we will, you know, in the long extent, it will mean the end of the world, because it will be too overpopulated. There will be no fresh water. We will be no fresh food, you know. It's impossible to continue on this path from a global perspective. And you know, it's a funny, you know, they're calling them the minority, but yeah. You know, Swedes is, I don't know, maybe 7 million Swedes. I think, you know,
right,
if you
Swedes,
go, and if you go to a random African country, you have, a lot of more Africans, a lot of African country has doubled their populations just in 40 or 50 years.
Yeah.
You know, and the same in Asia, you know, how are they going to solve this problem? Because this is, of course, an international problem, and we cannot solve it by taking, you know, even if it's 5 million people into Sweden, it will not solve anything from a global perspective.
No. And that's nothing at the end of it either. I mean, the projections here in Africa alone is 4 billion at the end of the century. I mean, what's going to happen with that? You know, it's impossible.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is a reality that everyone has to face. And it becomes more and more obvious that we only have a responsibility for ourselves, for our own people. You know, because it's impossible to take care of all the people in the world. Even if we want to, it's impossible, because the world will never work. So we have to see to our own people. It's the only way.
Well, Sweden, I think, stands as a failed example in that quest, right? That if you try to take on the world and become this, you know, Fredrik Reinfeldt said, our former prime minister of the Moderate Party, he said, that Sweden has become a humanitarian superpower. The end result is what we have in front of our eyes, which is a country which is barely at this stage even able to take care of its own population.
Yeah, and the worst part is it's not over yet. You know,
no, far from.
But people start to think this now because, you know, of course, you remember 2-3 months ago, the situation was very drastic, you know, very much people coming here every day. But now, of course, because of the weather and things like this, it has decreased. But just wait, you know, 1 month, 2 months, and we will see exactly the same thing happening again.
Yeah, yeah.
And we have to realize that, you know, it's not enough that we put up some borders and say that, you know, only 10% of you can come into this country. We have to make a change that is very drastic. It's the only way that our society can work. It's the only way it can survive. You know, I think if a change is coming, it must come within, you know, the next 5 to 10 years. You know, we have to make a change rapid. Otherwise, you know, I don't even want to talk about what will happen otherwise, but it's so very important that people have to understand that we cannot wait. We cannot just follow the situation and see what it will bring us. Because if we don't make a change now, it will not happen. You know, so people must get their asses off the couch and start doing some work. You know, we need everyone to do actual work on behalf of our people.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, in the next segment, I want to talk about that aspect of what to do, right? What is the battle about right now? How should it be fought? What tactics and strategies can we use? You know, is it a meta-political battle? Is it an action on the ground, such as we've seen with other, you know, parties like Greece with the Golden Dawn and things? They try to help people that's on the ground and try to be supportive and be there as someone where the government have failed, etc. That's some of the things I want to discuss in the next segment. But you know, before we take a break here in a few minutes, I do just want to make sure that we actually give out some of the details about what you're involved in right now, and maybe we can just spend a few minutes talking about that. You have your EU party, of course. You have a book publishing company. You have a bunch of other stuff going on. So just tell us about some of the things you're up to right now.
Yeah, like you said, I am involved in a lot of different projects, and you know, this is what I like. I like to have a lot of balls in the air. You know, I like to work with a bunch of things. And now, since beginning of this year, I'm elected as secretary in a party that is recognized on a European level called the Alliance for Peace and Freedom. And this is actually a pan-European party that combines a lot of different European nationalistic parties together. So we have, for instance, NPD from Germany, Golden Dawn from Greece, Forza Nova from Italy, and several other parties that are involved in the Alliance for Peace and Freedom. And our task is to try to find ways for the parties to cooperate in a further extent, see how we can help each other, but also to be an ideology guideline for the European people, and to get involved in the big international level questions, like, for instance, improving the relations with the Russian people, that you all know that the European Union and the American establishment are trying to more or less build a wall between Russia and the rest of Europe.
See, they can build a wall, but Trump can't, huh?
Yeah. Also, if we see after what is happening now in Syria and the conflicts there, you know, we have been very active in this sense. We have had last year we had representatives from the APF who were in a fact-finding mission in Damascus in Syria, met with people responsible in Syria from the government, and had discussions on what is going on and things like this. So, you know, we are involved in very big issues, not just about Europe, but also from a more international point of view. As I said, my work there is as Secretary General, and that means that I am responsible for the organization, for the more administrative work, for the more organizing new parties, new members who want to come in, organizing the events, and coordinate between the different countries. So this is, of course, a work and a mission that is very exciting. I get to meet a lot of people in Europe, a lot of professional nationalistic politicians, people have been active more or less their whole lives. And it's, of course, very something that I can learn very much from, that also I hope to be able to bring into Sweden, to this what I'm learning and my experiences in this field, to help our country and our people in every way I can.
Well, absolutely. And there's a couple more sites and stuff I want to ask you about too, but if people want to, let's say, help you in your efforts, whether that's you personally or the party or whatever, and whether that's political in some way, activism, even financially, et cetera, is there a way to do that for people?
Yes, absolutely. And as I said, I'm very involved in a lot of different projects. So if they want to contact me personally, I think the easiest way is if we set up my email address at this when you broadcast this radio show, so people can contact me through my email.
Yeah, we can put it in the show notes if you want to. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you are interested in helping the Alliance for Peace and Freedom, you can go in and enter our homepage and contact us through there. We can put this up there as well, a link to this. So I think, I'm very happy to help people if they want to be involved in any, more or less any way. I think, if I can help you take some step forward, even if it's from a financial point of view, if you want to do some activism, if you want to do some other work, we need all types of people in this struggle. And if someone want to find their place, they don't know how to do it, be free to contact me. I will help in a way I can, because this is an effort we have to do together. It's not something me or you, Henrik, or a few other people can do by their own.
No,
this is an effort. This is an effort that everyone have to participate in, even if it's just a small effort or if it's a big effort.
Yeah.
The important thing is that everyone have to make an effort.
Exactly. Volunteer work, no matter how small, it could be excellent. I found the most difficult thing, at least for me personally at the moment, is to actually find and even have the time to delegate, and also actually get a good overview of people's talents, right? You want them to, their best and most natural abilities, you want to have work with them as opposed to against them, right?
Yeah.
So, but see, that's another thing. What's needed here is people who can manage and administrate and kind of oversee and set up projects and find the right people and stuff like that. So there's, we have a lot of work to do. That's the basic point here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is something I can do because I have a wide contact network throughout Europe because of the APF. I have contacts with parties throughout all Europe, and of course also Sweden, but So you know, you don't have to be active in Sweden to contact me. You know, I can try to help if you're in Germany or Italy or wherever you are. You know, I can try to help, and I can set you up with the contacts I have in those areas or in those countries. You know, and you know, everyone who listened, try to understand that, you know, this is not something you can just stand by and watch happening. You know,
no.
We all have to take responsibility of the situation and try our best to change it. There is no other way, no other option, and we have to first of all make all our sympathizers, listeners, readers understand this, because they have taken the first step. They have liberated themselves, you know, from the brainwash of the media. They have understood that something is wrong. They are listening to this show, or they are reading the alternative media, or whatever, because they have a sense that there's something wrong going on, and there need to be a change. And this is the first step. But now they have to take the next step. They have to get involved.
Absolutely. Well, the fact is, no one else is going to do it, you know. And everyone can sit around on their ass waiting for someone else to step up to the plate, but that's just not going to happen, you know. And so that's where we need to inspire people, of course, and need to find the right, you know, spot for them. But, you know, again, as you said, no matter how small, begin there, you know, in whatever way you can. Spread the word. Talk with people, you know, even if that it comes down to, as you said, handing out flyers or whatever, but to even more advanced things of getting together. I think the most important thing is really to build the network of people around the country, so that we know that there are good people no matter where we might be, and that there are people who are able and capable to do things, and we can work together with. You know, there is a lot of people out there that are, they don't like what's happening, but they don't know where to go. They don't know where to channel some of their discontent, right? So that's where we come into the picture, where we have to take our responsibility to make sure that these people get together and meet, and that something is beginning to move on that level, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And there we have a great responsibility to take the time to actually do this, because it's, I know from experience, it's sometimes very difficult, you know, because you're so very involved in a project and everything, all your time is just going on for one single project, or just, you know, doing what you're doing. But
yeah.
We also have to see, as you know, public people and people who are trying to make a change, that we have a responsibility also to the new people that are approaching us, that we need to guide them. We need to make them find themselves, find you know, what they are suited for, what they should do. And we have to take the time to do this. Otherwise, it will just end up by us sitting here and doing the same over and over all year. But if we don't get any fresh people, if we don't get more people involved, then it will just stop at this at where we are now.
Absolutely. Well, a couple of more things here before we take a short break. Logik Förlag, or Logic Publishing House, tell us about that.
Yes, this was founded actually in 2005. Until 2015, it was more of a complement. Like I told you before, the party of the Swedes, we did a lot of different things, and we had a publishing house, and this was Logik Förlag. But it was not, you know, a main activity. It was just, you know, one of several branches. But now we have some people who are devoted and, you know, work full time with this publishing house. And you can say that our aim is to introduce and spread important ideas to the growing numbers of people who want the real change in the European countries. You know, to make important values and ideas mainstream, and to spread the ideas of what is happening, and also to encourage people, inspire people to learn more. You know, this is our focus. Mainly we publish titles in Swedish, but we have some in English as well, but Sweden is our main focus, and you know, we public a lot of relevant titles, translation from foreign authors, but also reprint of important titles that have been, you know, long gone for many years. But
yeah, you have like you know, the new right versus old right of Greg Johnson translated. You have My Awakening by David Duke. There's a number of good titles in there.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, and also by some by Kevin MacDonald, but
yes.
Also some Swedish authors as well, and also what we're doing, we organize some conferences because we think that okay, to do a book and spread the message in this way is of course one way, but especially now in the internet age, I think it's very important that people actually meet, that people actually, you know, see each other face to face, shake hands, you know, share ideas, networking and things like this. And I think, you know, conferences is a very good way to do this. It's a, you know, a relaxed way. You can come and listen to some people speak, and when you have, you know, break for lunch or coffee, you will, you know, talk with some new friends and people you meet there, and you know, you can start cooperating with each other, and this is important. You know, as you said before, it's a lot of people, they don't know you know, who should they contact to do things, and you know, they just have thoughts on, you know, there's something wrong in the society. And I think if people see, okay, there is a conference in Stockholm next week, and they go there, you know, they have the possibility to meet other people who shares their ideas, to think alike, and they can start networking on their own, start doing projects together, etc. And you know, we can see what it's growing from. So I think this is a very important thing.
Absolutely. Now, let's see. Is there anything else? You have another, you have a kind of a blog, if you will, nyanserat.nu, for the Swedish audience. You know, that, and you can tell us about that. And if there's anything else you want to give out, if you want to give your, you know, Twitter address or something, so people know how to get a hold of you.
Yeah. I'm involved in this blog called nyanserat.nu. And basically we are four or five friends who, you know, just thought we need a platform to write something when we have the time or the possibility, and you know, have something that we want to share with others. So I wouldn't say it's you know, a project that give my 100% of attention, but it's somewhere at least that we can spread some ideas, and you know, write when there's time. So this is more of a, you can say, a hobby project, if you compare it to the other things that I am involved in. And of course, if you want to follow me on Twitter, my account name is Jakobsson Stefan, as one word. And I'm also on Facebook, but I can't remember the exact address. Maybe we can put it in the show afterwards.
Certainly, yeah. Okay, folks, let's take just a short break here, and then we'll continue and talk more with Stefan in the second hour. Much more to discuss, much more to ask him about. A lot of good things already that we've discussed, but a lot more to go. So stay with us. We'll be right back. We'll see you on the other side. Well, before we proceed, ladies and gentlemen, with the second hour with Stefan Jakobsson, let me tell you about our upcoming guests who are next on Red Eyes Radio. We have Frank Raymond, author of Sweet Dreams and Terror Cells, an outsider perspective on the traits that would be lost with the Caucasian people if current trends continue. Interesting interview, something different. We also have Jan Ott from Holland on the Wera Linda book, an ancient Frisian document about ancient European civilizations. We have Blair Cottrell and Thomas Sowell from Fortitude Australia. We also have Rob speaking about targeting the biggest enemy of all, bad parenting, and how to create a merchant guild of sorts, some solid solutions to some of our problems. We also have Kurt Doolittle and later Matt Forney on the RK selection theory. That's some of our upcoming shows. Right now, as we continue with Stefan Jakobsson, we are going to get into the metapolitical battle and discuss the underlying factors for what makes a political party work and ultimately fulfill the needs of the people. It's not only that our people are being targeted and can't encourage an identity of their own. We are losing our culture and a grip on who we are in an increasingly globalized, internationalized world. We discuss how to encourage these aspects and bring them back and renew them and bring them into the new millennium. RedIceMembers.com is the website. Go there, sign up, and tune in to any of our previous shows and the continuation of this one. We also have videos, inside episodes, films, and much there for you. It's only €6 per month, and we have 3 month up to 2 year subscriptions available. It gets cheaper per month the longer you subscribe for. Stay tuned for our 10-year Red Ice birthday party coming up now in April as well. We have more on this coming soon. And for non-members, if you're not yet a subscriber, redicecreations.com is where you can listen to our free shows. 3 new programs each week. This includes Radio 314 with Lana. We also produce videos regularly. We have a busy news section with frequent updates. And the site is getting a much, much needed overhaul right now. Then we'll move on to the members' website and do that next. We have a lot of plans for that as well. So a lot of things going on right now. Well, thank you for listening. Don't miss the second hour with Stefan Jakobsson, redicemembers.com. As I said, go there now, sign up, and when you do, share with some of your close friends and family, and of course, support independent media. We'll talk to you after the break. Thank you so much again.